This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Women tend to live longer than men in many countries around the world. In the U.S., for instance, women outlive men by an average of 5 years. There's long been speculation that life expectancy was linked to genetics, but new research suggests that male attitudes toward their own health may be at the core of this divide. A new article in The Guardian by Duke physician Heider Verreich surveys the latest findings. Heider Verreich is a fellow in cardiology at Duke University Medical Center, and he's joining us again on this program. Welcome back.
Frank, thanks for having me back on the show.
Let's talk about this article. Talk about life expectancy in general. How does life expectancy compare around the world? Women generally outlive men on average, right?
Sure. So, I mean, if you look back at the records, our collected records over the past 150 years, human life expectancy has increased more over these past 150 years than at any other point in our entire history. One of the things that did start to emerge was that around 150 years ago, in the start of the 18th century, women and men lived about for the same duration, which was surprisingly just to the mid-20s. That was the average life expectancy of any resident of the city of Boston, which is where we have some of the first records from. But then as we got better at making sure that childbirth wasn't a death sentence and women were actually able to have kids and not die off prematurely, we started to see a gap emerge. We started to see that women consistently across societies lived longer than men. And that gap in the United States is about 5 years. In other countries such as Russia, it's about 10 years. Mm. So this is certainly something that we have not seen for the expanse of human civilization, but certainly something that we now see consistently across most developed societies.
And right here, we should take one step back and talk about life expectancy and what we're really talking about. It doesn't mean that people suddenly were able to live into their 70s and 80s. They did, and they have been since probably primitive times. Average life expectancy takes into account early deaths.
Absolutely. So this takes into account kids who were dying off of diseases such as polio, measles, etc. People have lived to an older life since, you know, I mean, if you look at records from the Roman emperors or the Greek emperors, they would frequently live into their 50s and 60s, some even older. But this is something that represented society as a whole, kind of being able to live longer in general.
All right. So let's talk about some of the theories. Once women did start, on average, showing longer life expectancies, what were the theories?
So some of the theories have to do with the fact that women have this female sex hormone, estrogen, conveys some protection as far as reducing the risk of heart disease, et cetera, is concerned. Some have postulated that the fact that women have a faster heart rate in general in some ways or somehow stimulates or simulates the effect of exercise, which is why they're able to live longer. And others have said that because even at birth, the female birth rate is higher. We have more female children than we have male children, which in some ways suggests that even from almost an embryonic stage, women have some type of advantage over men. So those are some of the biological theories that have been postulated. But if you look around the world and if you look at the records we have from countries as, you know, from Africa, the United States, Europe, what you see is that there is a lot of variation. And if it were all just biology, you wouldn't see that variation. You would actually see a more consistent effect. The story probably is much more complicated than that. And what we're seeing more and more is that it is male behaviors that are more likely driving men dying off earlier than women.
And that takes us to your article where you did a survey of recent research that indicates that it's just that. So talk about these behaviors and how they might be contributing to a shorter life expectancy.
So some of these behaviors just have to do with the fact that men are more likely to take risks than women. Now, some of that has to do with the fact that, you know, the male hormone testosterone drives risk-taking behavior, but a lot of it is a construct of society. So, for example, men are less likely to attempt suicide, but when they do so, they're much more successful, unfortunately, because they use more violent means. Men have a higher rate of smoking pretty much across the world. Men drink more. Men have more road traffic accidents, gunshot wounds, etc. All of these are things that are driven by male behaviors. Men are less likely to seek the help of a physician if they fall sick. Men who have some type of psychiatric issues, such as depression, or anxiety or other things are less likely to go see a psychiatrist. They're less likely to take their medications. So really, if you look at it from a 10,000 mile view, what you're seeing is that men are just not very good at taking care of themselves.
And this isn't very easy, or it seems to me an easy thing to test, given your theory that if it's cultural, it should vary from culture to culture. So where masculinity is defined differently, we should see different outcomes. And do we?
Absolutely. And one of the studies that I found was very interesting is, so I think once we think of masculinity, I think whatever society we come from, we tend to think of it in a very fixed way. We kind of take it as this is how men are. You know, the phrase goes, you know, boys will be boys or men will be men, and this is the things that they will do. But there is this interesting study from the UK in which they surveyed people. They surveyed men who had had heart attacks and who had actually, they wanted to know what was it that caused them to not seek help immediately. And the two main groups that they studied, and this is a study from the UK, was they studied sort of white British men. And when they asked them about, well, why didn't you seek help, or what drove you to seek healthcare in general, they said things that we'd hear all the time, such as, you know, I wanted to just quote-unquote suck it up. I didn't want to feel weak or appear weak. I really wanted to see if this will go away, et cetera, et cetera. And all of that resulted in the fact that they had worse outcomes after their heart attack because they didn't get timely help. Now, the other group that they studied in that same survey was mostly immigrants from South Asia. And those men had a very different view of what it meant to be a man. Many of them who sought healthcare said that they felt duty-bound, responsible for their health, because that was a way of them serving their families. That a man is someone who is there for his family and who is strong and therefore seeks help. And that made a light bulb go off in my head. What it meant to me was that this idea of manhood is not something that's static, but actually is something that can be shaped by society and societal forces, which is why myself, I wrote this article with Dr. Califf, who's a professor here at Duke University, and both of us felt very strongly that this is something that we could potentially shape.
Well, I want to talk more about how we do that, but when I ask you that, that should mean that the disparity between men and women in South Asia would be smaller. That would be my hypothesis. Has that been tested?
So if you look around the world, poorer countries such as, you know, South Asia or in Africa, the disparity is less, but that is actually driven more so by the fact that women have a higher rate of maternal mortality. Mm. So it's hard to tease out why that difference is lower and how pervasive that attitude is, because, again, those were just immigrants, and that may be a sub-selected population in general.
And there are some cross-cultural variations that are stark, Asian women compared to, say, African-American men, for mm-hmm. one.
Right. So if you look in the United States, an Asian woman lives around 16 years longer than an African man. And that's that's just one example that tells you that health is more than just a biologic construct. It is shaped by society. It is shaped by behavior. It's shaped by those around you. And it is shaped by your own view of what it is you seek out of life and you seek out of seeking help.
And transgender individuals who now identify as male have a smaller disparity.
Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that also keyed me into this idea that really it was more so this societal construct of masculinity which was driving this disparity rather than something that's just tied to our biology.
So what would you do if you identify that and say, look, there's something, some signal that we're giving off about masculinity that's harmful to men's health? What do you do at the public policy level?
So I think the first thing you do is really identify it. Right now, when I was doing this, doing my research for this piece with Dr. Califf, what we found was that there was a huge paucity of actual sort of analytic work that had been done in this area. We work with some investigators, researchers out of Stanford who've done some great work looking into this. But really, overall, this is an area that definitely needs more attention. So I think the first thing is really identifying that we really are dealing with a problem and also feeling like, well, this is something we can fix. Once we've done that, I think the second thing is really thinking about how can we shape what it means to be a man in a positive way. And in some ways, we have to look at these same issues to some extent have also plagued women. I think a lot of people have thought about the negative portrayals of what it means to be a woman in society and are working on changing that. The fact that, you know, a lot of females were not going into science, technology, and mathematics, and that really has required a change, a society level change that starts from, you know, what type of Barbie can you buy off of a store? And I think the same type of thing needs to happen with boys. One of our guests here is a children's book author, and that's really where these interventions need to start. We need to start shaping how boys think of themselves, what it means for them to seek help, that it doesn't make them weak. And those interventions need to start from childhood through teenage years and all the way to adulthood. We also need to have more realistic depictions of what being a man, and especially as you get older, what that looks like. If you look at some of the research we reviewed, so if you look at depictions of men in men's magazines, you will never see an old person there. You will never see a man who is sick or debilitated in any way. So I think those depictions, those images need to change, and we need to have a more inclusive and realistic view that's projected.
That's why I do radio, so nobody can see me, Haider. What a pleasure. Thank you so much. As always, great analysis. Wonderful to talk to you. Haider Vereich, a fellow in cardiology at the Duke University Medical Center. Thanks a lot.
Thanks again.
You can find out a link to his article about life expectancy and toxic masculinity at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the perplexing family and ethnic networks behind the diamond industry. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.